Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Ever want more color in your life? Thinking about remodeling? Well, we have a very special guest in studio this evening. Joey Bright is here. She will be talking about how to bring color into people's lives and how those gatekeepers, those negative voices that we all know about, how they show up and affect decisions related to color and shifts in the living environment.
So welcome, Joey.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming. They say that if you live through a remodel without splitting up, It's a miracle. And Diana and I did do that, and we did not split up. And so we are living proof that you don't have to split up necessarily, but there are really big decisions to be made. And Joey is here. She's going to share some examples of the dynamics of couples and how they negotiate remodels, colors, the things that she's come in contact with in her line of work, and share a little bit about her life as well. And she tells us that her clients call her or refer to her as the doctor of color. So doctor meaning psychotherapist, I'm pretty sure. But she's going to tell us more about that. In about 5 minutes. Before we get to news and events, however, we want to let you know that we are going to be giving a pair of tickets away a little later in the show. It's called Enchantingly Wicked. It's an evening with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus and Stephen Schwartz. It's going to be at Davies Symphony Hall Tuesday, March 20th at 8 p.m. So stay tuned. Listen for when we offer those tickets. But first,
news and events with Outbeat member Greg Moralia.
Good evening. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for Sunday, March 4th, 2012. The San Francisco Chronicle reported on a new field poll this week that shows that support for same-sex marriage in California has never been higher, with 59% of the state's voters backing the legalization of gay nuptials. What's really notable is that some of the more significant gains in support come from Catholics, Latinos, and older voters, part of the core of support for the voter-approved Proposition 8, the 2008 measure that defined marriage as between a man and a woman. Republicans and those who identify themselves as conservatives are the only demographic bloc that oppose allowing gays to marry. According to the survey of 1,003 registered voters released this week, overall 34% of the respondents oppose same-sex marriage. In a separate question, 51% of the respondents said that gays should be allowed to marry, up from 44% just 2 years ago. The survey found that 29% support civil unions but not marriage, and 15% no legal recognition whatsoever. And here locally, the 5th Annual Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival will feature several LGBT-themed full-length and short documentaries during its 4-day run, starting March 29th through Sunday, April 1st. The festival is presented by the Sebastopol Center for the Arts and was started by lesbians Linda Galletta, who serves as the executive director, and Teresa Book Webster, who's the festival's co-artistic director. Here are just a couple of the LGBT-related films. The Grove shows how one community responded to its overwhelming grief created by the AIDS crisis, and how the seeds of a few visionaries blossomed into something larger and more productive than they could have ever imagined. The Grove was directed by Andy Abrams and screens on Saturday, March 31st at 4:30 p.m. at the Sebastopol Cinemas. Hold On Tight moves between the public and private spaces in which gay and lesbian couples live and explores small gestures of human connectedness. The gentle interactions not only carry a huge personal significance, but also the potent power to create social change. Yet for most people, being affectionate beyond the hall door isn't intended as a political statement. It's an expression of love. Amanda Rogers is the director of Hold Tight, which will be shown on Saturday, March 31st at 4:30 p.m. at the Sebastopol Cinemas. And Jen Silent was directed by North Bay filmmaker Stu Maddox. Jen Silent will screen on April 1st at 3:30 p.m. at the Sebastopol Veterans Building. 282 High Street in Sebastopol. Program director Jason Perdue said, "This is our fifth annual Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival. Our beautiful new print program and our Thursday opening night at the Anley High Auditorium are two big changes for this year. We're very excited with this amazing lineup of films from all around the world and four from right here in Sebastopol. Our mission is to bring the best documentaries and their filmmakers to West Sonoma County has been fulfilled, and again we will screen 53 films in 4 days. You can learn more about the film festival at www.sebastopolfilmfestival.org. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, March 6th at 6 p.m., the Trans Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Trin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Wednesday, March 7th, the Sitai Bistro, a gay-owned establishment, will again host their Dungeness Crab Feast at the location at 2323 Sonoma Avenue in Santa Rosa. 30% of the proceeds will benefit Face to Face, the Sonoma County AIDS Network, and the Sonoma Humane Society. For a delicious four-course meal, which includes mostly Dungeness crab and a glass of wine, the cost is $55. Make your reservations today by calling 528-8333. And on Wednesday, March 7th at 6 p.m., the Marin Women Seeking Women's Group, an informal social group, will gather at Jason's Restaurant, 300 Drake's Landing in Greenbrae. And on Thursday, March 8th at 7 p.m., the Men for Men support group meets at the Marin AIDS Project, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. And also on Thursday at 7:30, PFLAG will meet at the Westminster Presbyterian Church, 240 Tiburon Boulevard in Mill Valley. You can learn more at pflag.org. And finally, on March 10th at 10 a.m., the Food for Thought Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank Drive happens at the Guerneville Safeway and the Bicentennial Safeway in Santa Rosa. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, you can be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer.
And welcome back. This is Living Proof. If you just joined us, we're in studio talking with our guest and ran right into on air. So I don't know if anybody got the end of our conversation, but we've just been talk. But anyway, we are in studio with Joey Bright. And right before we left for the news, we said that your clients refer to you as the doctor of color.
You bet.
Could you elaborate on that?
MD
for us,
on the paint right there. A couple of things. One is an angle we were talking about off air, which is sort of the psychological aspects of when people call me as a color consultant to come and look at their dining room, bedroom, kitchen, whatever. I'm looking in their homes. You know, it's like their abodes, their nests. And color brings up a lot. Not that they necessarily, that's something that they've thought about ahead of time at all. But you have one person in a couple who says they want, you know, they thought the living room was going to go green. And I get over there, and the other person in the couple who's there, they're saying, you know, I don't like green. Now I realize they haven't talked before I've gotten there. This is where the doctor of color comes in, because my goal is to make sure that there's some level of understanding and compromise so that whatever is achieved in terms of selecting the color, everybody feels like they had a say in it and they're not doing something just because the other one wanted to, or because the other one maybe is the one writing the checks and has the money and holds, quote, you know, the power and the relationship or the control in that way. But really to make them feel good that they have control and they took control over the situation. Color or a painter or something didn't come in just to take over and rob them of that pride. Because most people do, when they own a home, they have house pride, usually. Many times they haven't discovered it. And it takes somebody like me or another person from the trades to come in and give them that, you know, kind of hand it to them in a way. So there's that aspect of the doctor of color where I find something that they both fall in love with and really feel good about. Sometimes the doctor of color comes in because I've got my tints with me. And it could be that I'm taking something they thought they wanted. Maybe they started with a color and now it needs a little futzing. Mm-hmm. So then I'll bring in my tints and do stuff. And people usually just love to watch that. I don't like to get into doing custom tints very much because I like people to be able to go to the local store and just say, I want, you know, such and such. And it's there. It's much more accessible that way than this idea of custom stuff that they'd have to hire me back or somebody else to play with. I'd rather give them the power right from the beginning.
You say you go into people's homes and they own their homes. Do you help people who maybe live in apartments as
yes,
well?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I grew up in, I was in apartments for years and years. And it's one of the reasons that I actually started out being a house painter is almost every apartment I went in, even if I lived there for 6 months, a year, maybe 2 years, I would do at least one wall. I would end up doing some kind of accent color, usually wherever the bedroom, or if it was often a studio apartment, wherever I put my bed, something that would cause me to feel like this is mine. Even if I didn't own the building or own the room or the space, I owned it by just putting some color in there. And that's really where it started. It wasn't a conscious thing like, oh, I'm going to, a few years from now, I'm going to become a house painter and, down the line. But no, I just would own that spot. And a lot of times because, many people, they move into apartments, you get some hideous chocolate shag carpet or something. You can't tear it up. Well, I even got over the years and I became a better, more skilled painter and negotiator with landlords, I would negotiate ripping up that hideous carpet and then paying maybe for the hardwood floors to be redone if I thought I was going to stay there for a while. But,
So people, even though they have an apartment, they rent an apartment, you're saying people do paint and then maybe when they leave, they paint over it or something? Or?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Absolutely. I've negotiated a lot with people. There are a lot of people around the Bay Area who are working for, wonderful places that they're going to stay for a long time, businesses that they know they're planted, but they don't, and they maybe could afford a house, but they don't want to. They want to live in apartments and they know they're going to be there for a year or two and they want to do something. So I'll send them through a series of questions. Say, well, why don't you talk to your landlord and find out. Sometimes we're able to pick certain colors. Green is a very common color. And I mean greens that are like in the sage green tones, not lime green or something like that. Landlords often, if it's done well and the paint job is well, often they'll let it stay and there's no negotiating with money later or anything, as long as it looks good. But otherwise, it's just paint. They can do a wall that's black. And then when they leave, you throw primer on it, get your off-white color on there. I do matches and I tell them, put it in writing. Tell your landlord, you do this. Sometimes the landlords that were negative at first about that, when they see it in writing and it's been proposed, and they see they're either going to get that job or they're going to be able to keep this much money, withhold that. People can, and I have watched people so happy when they're staying in apartments, just to be able to do one wall. Usually people go in and feel like, I can't touch the walls, I can't do anything, I don't own it. And they feel sort of captive, for a while.
Yeah.
And... again, that's where the doctor of color, I'll come in like that and find some beautiful coffee color that works just great with all the furniture. Mm-hmm. And usually landlords come over and they'll see it and they like it more often than not.
Great. Good. Sounds great. And you have tons and tons of stories, and I know that because I've been hearing them off air. And I really get how passionate you are around your colors. And we want our audience to kind of get a sense of your journey in color. So, Joey, if you can just tell us where you started. How did you get involved in being this color specialist?
I started out like a lot of females, I'd say, in the 70s and 80s that had, particularly for butch women, feeling like they didn't have a lot of options. I did not have a lot of formal education. And the jobs that I thought about doing, like teaching profession, I'd heard stories about other women, particularly butch lesbians, who had either gotten fired or they were accused and it was this borderline threat. They were going to get fired because, maybe they looked at a kid too long. There was some kind of insinuation that just thought, I don't want to put myself in that situation. And the first, I worked retail, I worked at restaurants, I did all kinds of stuff, and I kind of happened upon house painting. I sort of fell into it. And I lied the first job that I had. I said I had been doing it for quite a while. And that's actually because I had been painting my own apartments. I had done things like risked painting a wall here or there, and I started to learn things. So I fell into my first painting job, and I had been painting for years before I learned that people actually got paid for their color ideas. I was just thinking I'm just doing the labor, and that's all that I could do. And you know, some people in your lives, you may not like them, or maybe they feel threatening to you or something, then you realize that's a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a man in the community, in the world of home improvements and stuff, that I ended up in a 5-block radius in a section in Oakland over a 3-month period of time, 5-block radius, I painted 3 homes. These 3 homes, this man had done all the colors for. He charged $350 an hour. Whoa. People paid him, and I was blown away by the second home that I went to, and I saw the sheets that he left, you know. Guess what? All 3 homes, the colors were exactly the same. There were 5 different colors. They were all the same. He had shifted only one of them by half a strength of the formula. And I looked at that and went, you know, I've been giving away my color ideas for years. Damn it. Next time somebody asks me to come and do colors because they liked what I did to their neighbors or their lovers or their cousins, I'm going to tell them it's $150. And, you know, I got a phone call just like that about a week later. Some new client called me up and said, you know, I saw that you did really good colors over at my friend's, blah, blah, blah. How much? And she said, how much do you charge? Nobody had ever done that before. But, you know, it's that whole thing of intention that I've heard you talk about, too. There, I had it in my mind. I kind of had said it out loud. This woman calls me and says, how much would you charge? And I said, well, $150. And that was huge for me to do that. And that was in 2002. I started my website. I decided I was going to focus on color. I have always hired myself out as and sort of advertised myself as a specialty painter and as an artisan in that way. But I've been doing basic house painting and just getting better and more skilled at it over the years. And then that color consultation just came in as a business. And it really did sway me in a whole direction that wasn't something like I'm in high school and I thought, oh, I'm going to become a color consultant. I didn't even know it existed. So now it's been, you know, 10 years.
So I'm curious, when you said 150 and that was huge for you, what was her reaction in, like, in the next second?
Oh, she didn't skip a beat. Okay, when can you come over?
Oh, my gosh. How did you feel in that moment?
Well, the same way I felt when I moved from a retail job at $350 an hour, and the first time I picked up a paintbrush and I got $850 an hour, and the very first day that I painted and I worked really hard, and the new employer said to me, he wanted to hire me, and I immediately had a raise to $10 an hour. You know, that's 1984, and it was like, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden I'm like $35,000 a year. You know, that was big. Working class kid, that was big. You know, and back then, too, you had the options of, you know, going into the union, which I didn't want to do. I debated that for a while, but union work and union painting, as much as I support unions, if you're really good at a particular aspect of a trade, and I was very good at oil-based painting, I got great with a brush, then that's what a union would have you do, you know, 50, 60 hours a week. And I didn't want to do that. I knew I wanted to go a creative route. I wanted to learn how to do full finishes. I wanted to experiment with metallic paints. I wanted to do that fancy stuff that wealthy people in other areas, you know, hired painters to do. And I had a couple of British guys on a crew with me that sort of took me under their wing. And I was like the girl painter that just went real hard. And I met other females in construction in that time in the early 80s that, you know, a lot of them went the union option and they never learned other stuff. But they had health benefits. And
So you had a knack, obviously, for color.
Yeah.
I mean, did you notice that any in your childhood, like when you did your little coloring books and water paint?
Well, it wasn't just that. I had a mother who, about every 6 weeks or so, my sister and I had to stay home on a Saturday, and we'd have to clean the house really well. And in cleaning the house really well, a couple times a year, at least, if not 3 times a year, my mom got some idea in her head. She'd look, like, at the living room wall. All of a sudden, my sister and I look at each other like, uh-oh. And she'd say, I'm going to paint the wall. And we'd change the color of the wall or something. She was also an artist. We didn't have enough money growing up. My mom wanted this wallpaper that was a big tree. And we didn't have the money. I don't know, Sears, it cost whatever. And so she just moved all the furniture aside, did the drawing on the wall. She painted, used watercolor. So I attribute a lot of my interest. And always if I would walk into your house, I know a way that I'm looking at furniture, placement, walls, colors, everything, and how do they work together? Does it make me feel like I want to sit here? Do I have to stop at this threshold? Or, you know, that kind of stuff. That's my mom. And that was also having to clean the house because painting, you know, in the trades and doing this as a specialty, 75% or more of painting is prep. And about 50% of that is getting surfaces clean and the whole area before you can even think about taking a brush. Then that's the fun part. People always want to do the fun part. I hate painting parties.
Oh. So you mentioned your mom, and that just makes me wonder about you in your childhood and being gay and lesbian and how you came out. And could you give us your story?
Oh, it's a big one, but, you know, I'll nail it down. I mean, I was one of those little kids in kindergarten who fell in love with some other little girl, you know, right away. So I knew something was up from the time I was, the earliest memory I have that I know of is even 3 years old. And that I've been able to check with my sister because of falling in love with, you know, a neighbor in the neighborhood or something. But I had an attraction, same-sex attractions that goes way back, and I was always in love with some girl from grade to grade. You know, I can remember every grade. So
was it reciprocated?
Oh, not at all. No. No. I was a class clown. You know, I did a lot of things that a lot of young gays and lesbians do. They become the class clowns or the ones that are, you know, starting the theater group at the school or whatever to distract from my real, you know, won't you please look in my direction sensibilities. But I did get called a queer when I was 9 years old, and I denied it, even though I didn't know what it was. But I knew it wasn't good, and they were saying something, you know, bad about me. But at, like, age 8, 9, being called a queer, and I got chased down in the, you know, playground. I was called a queer. I was pushed around all the time. I got into sports. I was good at baseball, and, you know, I played baseball with the boys. I was the tomboy. I did all that stuff. But, you know, I had to fend off some boys that tried to beat me up after school a couple of times. And I just kept thinking that I was different. But back in, you know, we're talking, I was born in 1955. I grew up on all those scary psychological films where, you know, women like the Children's Hour, they either committed suicide or in The Fox, they got murdered or, you know, or they were alcoholics. You know, Killing of Sister George. I mean, I grew up with that. So by the time I was 16, I thought, man, I'm not going to say anything to anybody because, I mean, they're going to be locked up, shot in the back. Somebody's going to chop a tree down like they did in The Fox, you know. I mean, I grew up in that generation of don't. And at the same time, I couldn't really hide it. I mentioned about being 16. At 16, or so, I'm trying to think, in 1971 when Ms. Magazine came out. And prior to that, I was down in the San Diego area, and I was, I mean, of course, there was no internet back then. I don't know how. I was looking magazines, something, and I heard about the Daughters of Bilitis. And they were way up in L.A. where I had originally grown up, but then as a teenager grew up down in San Diego. And there I was, 16 years old. I hooked up with some older women who were probably over 40. They looked ancient to me. And they looked at me like, what are you doing here? You know, I think they were afraid they were going to be accused of being child molesters. I snuck out of the house to go to meetings, Daughters of Bilitis meetings. And again,
were you the youngest member there?
Oh,
yeah.
God, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
But wow, so, but you found a place, though, that can support you.
Barely. I mean, the thing was, I was sneaking out in the car, saying that I was going to a friend's house, you know, and those meetings, I mean, I'm talking about, I went to like 4 of them over a course of a year. And then Ms. Magazine in that time somewhere had come out. I was in high school and I was cocky enough, I guess. And I came on to one of my straight classmates right away. I asked her out and she laughed and thanked me, but you know, just one of the most popular girls in the school, you know. Whatever, and that was high school. That's so 71. I graduated in 73, and I was a full-blown dyke by the time I hit the junior college campus, but a feminist, and that was the main, that was safer to, instead of, you know, I wasn't using dyke, but instead of being a lesbian and really pushing that agenda, it was trying to just get a feminist organization on the campus, and then be able to meet other women and, you know.
How was it with your mom and you coming out?
They didn't know. I mean, I kept it even on the down low. I was living at home and I kept it on the down low. My first girlfriend and stuff, when I was 17, 16, 16 and a half, when I came out, she and me, I mean, we very quiet for 2 years or something. We were both living at home. I remember seeing Margaret Sloan show up singing a song about being a lesbian. It was like on, I want to say 60 Minutes or something like that. I was sitting at my girlfriend's house and her parents were watching that show. And all of a sudden on Sunday night, you know, I was going to spend the night there. Sunday night, and this thing comes on. We were both just frozen watching this woman singing about being in love with her lover. And it was like, oh my God, you know? No, it was pretty terrifying. I thought at that point, not necessarily that I was going to be locked up, but, you know, again, that generation, I'm going to have probes put on my head. You're going to get, you know, electroshock to try to do something. So there was always a threat that somebody was going to try to do something to, you know, bogart your whole psyche somehow. So I guess, you know, I just felt like I'll hang out long enough and we'll see what's up.
So when did you come out? Just to say, here I am, people.
Well, like I said, I came out at that time in 73. I was out. But again, we're talking at a time pre-internet and where you're going to be out. I mean, people knew. I didn't have the conversations with my parents because I could get kicked out of the house. Mm-hmm. So I was just quiet about it there. Yeah. But then as I started to become a stronger feminist on the campus where I was, then I started lying about my age too, going to the clubs. Disco starts happening. It's all good, you know?
It's all good.
It's all good in the hood. We're going to take a music break, and we're going to play a marvelous song by Cyndi Lauper called True Colors. And I thought that was just so appropriate because we're talking about being our true selves and we're talking to the Doctor of Color. Before we break for music, however, I would like to offer these tickets to hear the evening with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus on Tuesday, March 20th at 8 p.m. in San Francisco. I'd like to offer that to the first caller. Enjoy the song. We'll be back.
The number,
584-2020, 584-2020. we want to thank Dara Dixon. Hey, holla. Dara got two tickets to An Evening with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Thank you so much for calling.
Enjoy
your tickets and whoever you're taking. Hope you guys have a good time. If you just joined us, this is Living Proof on KRCB Outbeat Radio. We are in studio with Joey Bright, the Doctor of Color, talking about coming out, painting, and relationships. So we started our show with Diana and I. I was saying that Diana and I did a remodel, and we did not divorce. And a lot of people say, if you can get through a remodel and not divorce, you know, that's pretty fantastic. And when I said that, Joey's eyebrows went up like, what? You went through a remodel? And how many fights did you have? And I said, we only had one fight. So can you, Joey, tell us why that stuck out for you?
Because in my experience, which is now more than 35 years, straight couples, when women are pregnant, they decide they want to have a kitchen or a bathroom remodel. And they're 6 months pregnant. And I would come in with a crew of people, and we'd just always looking at each other, waiting for the shoe to drop. And many times a divorce would happen before the kitchen was even done or the bathroom was done.
That's crazy.
A pregnant woman, you just don't mess with that. And gay couples, not so much. I'm saying gay as in gay male couples. A lot of times one or both of them have gotten every detail down to the second. And, they're very sure about who they're going to talk to and what's up. And they've done all the planning and everything. And it's a very interesting dynamic to see. Women and same-sex couples, females want to talk and process every damn thing. They want the grout color. They want to know what's going on with the floor. They want, as soon as they know that the options exist, now they got to talk about everything. And then a lot of times they got to argue about everything. And it can go on and on and on. And that'd be crazy. It just, again, it's that thing we were talking about earlier off air. It's about nest building. And there's this thing of the couple wanting to know that the other one feels just the way that she does. She wanted to have, the black countertop. And they're hoping that they agree on, the color of the cabinets and what's going to go in accent wall and all that stuff. And then they feel okay. And a lot of times, if one feels differently, it's like the world is shattered, and they're not going to be able to retrieve that bonding that they felt before. And a general contractor cannot usually pull that together. It takes people to be able to negotiate that. And separate from being a color consultant, I do get hired occasionally to do that negotiation. Exactly. That's why I always encourage people, when you are first looking at a remodel, don't just look at hiring the architect and the general contractor. Have the other person come in who can act as the smoother, the communicator for all of these people, for everything to run smoothly, because lawsuits, do happen sometimes. And so somebody else kind of acting as that liaison. So I act as a liaison sometimes. I'll do that for $100 an hour. Rates vary depending on locations and the needs of clients and things. And sometimes that's what it takes. And you had one fight. So I said, that's fantastic. I mean, that's a strong relationship.
I was telling Diana, I didn't even remember what the fight was about. But you remember, right, Diana?
Yeah. I mean, but as far as colors and what type of wood and tile or carpet, I think we are very clear and easygoing about that part. It was the more character stuff that kind of...
Like what?
More specific. Just you were... you wanted me to take the lead all the time and get on the contractors' cases and make them work harder, And it's like, Cher, you have a voice. You could say something too, And so we kind of got in a little fight around that. But then she was able to, rise.
Well, if I remember correctly, I actually...
See what you started, Joey?
I'll watch it now. You're going to finish the fight that you never really...
No, I mean, it's all done. But I have a hard time... confronting people, and it's easier to go through Diana.
I used her as the bad cop. So you set up good cop, bad cop, so you could look cool, and she's the meanie.
Well, it's not that I would look cool. I was gone. I was working. I was out the door at 5:30 in the morning, and I returned after the workers left. So it would make sense that Diana, who was home all the time, hello, would be talking to the people, right?
Now, that does make sense, but exactly, you're bringing up something that people don't think about ahead of time when they go, okay. And I imagine how it would have been if you and Diana had sat down before you even started the process. You invite some stranger into your lives who's going to be in your home, and you say, look, this is how I think we need to work this. This is going to be the smoothest for us. For the contractor, that's where somebody like a color consultant coming in with an architect, with a painting contractor, with the interior decorator or designer, color consultant helps that couple or whoever's living in the home look at all the aspects of things, because I know the drying times of things. I know usually how many weeks it takes to get a floor done, or how many days you have to stay off of the hardwood floor when it got refinished, how long it takes for the grout to dry so that you're not going to be able to shower for the next, you know, 48 hours. Many times the contractors and other people, they don't tell you that stuff. They just expect you like you're going to be gone, and you're not going to poof and leave. Some people do, but it's those kinds of things. So if you'd had, say, if you guys had hired me at that point, in the beginning, I could have said, this is how it can possibly look. And especially with a kitchen remodel, contractors usually, it's not necessarily that they're lying, but your countertop or something, maybe it fell on the boat coming from Greece. I've had stuff like that happen, and all of a sudden, the job that they said was going to cost $35,000 has now gone to $55,000, $65,000, $75,000 instead of 3 months, it's 6 months. That's why somebody who's pregnant, you know, a woman is starting to get a little itchy, or someone's in grad school. That's another one. They're like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, I'm on the outside and I can kind of see this, but.
Yeah, that's already enough stress. And then to do a remodel, I mean, the remodel was pretty stressful. And we had, in our situation, we had four foster kids living with us during. And seriously, everything was so smooth because Diana and I really talked about everything except this, the whole thing around me, she wanting me to take more control, more power, I guess, was just a character flaw anyway in my life anyway, and that I had to, you know, I had to rise and learn how to do it. So it was
but, hey, congratulations.
School,
you've been together for more than 30-something years.
Yeah.
34
right?
years.
Yeah.
Awesome. I've seen far lesser, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think it was an opportunity to learn a lot about ourselves as people and as a couple, and I think it was a good thing.
Yeah, it was good. And I can see how, Joey, you can help couples by, or individual, I mean couples basically, because we're talking couples, to go into their home.
Shared environments.
Yeah, and shared environments, okay. And, help them, mm-hmm. you know, get through mm-hmm. these hard places because, mm-hmm. you know, as a therapist, I hear stories like this. Mm-hmm. Sharon and I, we're different because we're able to handle things differently, but I hear divorces and separations over this type of thing a lot, so mm-hmm. they need to know more about you and what you do.
And you talking about being a psychotherapist, okay, this thing going back to the doctor of color, I'm going to somebody's house, and they say, oh, yeah, we wanted the green room or whatever, and then I get there, and all of a sudden, maybe one in the couple, they start, I bring these very large color format sheets, these sample sheets. All of a sudden, a face will change on the other person, and I'll, like, go, what's going on? You know, maybe they go, oh, you know that green? I had that in my childhood. You know, that's where my, you know, one of my parents abused me, something. All of a sudden, in that session, unbeknownst, you know, it something comes up. Color stimulates a lot of things. I see that something's going on. Then right then, I feel like I have something to offer that a lot of color consultants do notice that stuff, but they wouldn't necessarily pick up on it to really want to do something about it and be gentle with it. So
what did you do, or what would you do in that case where one loves this color green and the other one goes, wait a minute, this brings up something from my childhood and is really a heavy thing that she shares with you, like being molested. I mean,
there was a real story. This was a few years back where both the women, very strong relationship, great, you know, again, living room, they wanted a green, all kinds of greens. We start looking through all these greens and, you know, you've got greens that are like forest green. You've got lime green, bright things, stuff that kids are attracted to. They had some adopted children. They started thinking they had to have this room be so that the kids would like it. I'm just trying to get them to, you know, go in a direction. All of a sudden, we get to like an avocado green in the selection. One of the partners just shut down, and she started looking tearful.
This one
didn't notice because she's so excited looking at the colors, and I just stopped for a little bit, and I said, you want to, like, look at this? Because it seems like you're having some, you know, feelings about it without sounding too, you know, corny like I'm a therapist. Mm. And she broke down, and she remembered some incident back in the avocado colors of that house, you know, and it was like, we're not going there at all. And, of course, her lover was like, we don't need it. Don't worry. We don't need to go anywhere near that. And moving from that, opening a fan deck, you know, taking a pause. I mean, in that situation, I said, let's take a break. Let's go look at another room for them. When we left that situation, came back, said, okay, fresh. We're looking at this room. Let's look at this whole other line of colors. We started looking at coffees and, and other things like that, and boom. And then I figured, you know, whatever work she was going to have to do with that was then later, and I'm gone, long gone. But it came up. It totally came up. And it has around very vibrant colors for people, too. Different ethnic backgrounds. Whether somebody's had an art, you know, influence in the home before. I've had stuff come up like that a lot where there are people that they had really intense colors in the home and somebody else is a total white bread. And I've got to find a way for both of those people. Usually it's about accenting walls and finding things they're going to like, not that all the walls get painted the same color, which is one of the biggest mistakes people make. They think they have to find a color and every wall in the house has to go like that, or an entire room has to go like that. And with a lot of lesbian couples, they go, oh, we just love lavender. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, and rolling my eyes. I don't want to paint another lavender house. Yes, lavender is a beautiful color, but a lot of times what I like to do is try to break that up, like two walls in lavender, two other walls, like I said, a coffee color, or greens, or something else that they haven't thought about. Take them outside their box a little bit. Push it.
What do you do with those ones who are like so adamant with the heels and they dug deep and they say, no, I want this color?
Well, usually they're not hiring me. I'm not even getting a phone call from people that have those personalities. Sometimes a partner can do that in the course of while we're talking, and then I just have to step back and say, you know, well, you guys need to, you talk about this some more and, you know, have me come back. I've had people straight out start arguing as if I'm not there. You know, they get all excited. I'm going, okay, you got to stop. I'm here. You take care of this some other time. You know, you don't need to waste money on, you know, on this right now. You take care of this and call me back. That's happened too, very rarely. But usually somebody's not so dug in the ground, or I wouldn't be in their house. There's usually an openness that's gone on there.
Cool. Good.
I'm just looking at your brochure, and I know the audience can't see it, but it looks like a regular brochure. You know, you're a color consultant. You say it brings in color into your life and everything, but what I see in the brochure is not who I see in front of me, and who I see in front of me is somebody that's really, really sensitive to dynamics, to I don't know, sensitivities that people have. That might set you apart from other color experts, you know? And I think that gets lost. I'm not trying to, I don't know.
I'm not going
to
redo my brochure. But it's interesting you bring that up, because very few color consultants, first of all, even have brochures. And on my brochure on the back, I have a small image, a picture of me, a portrait. Sometimes people call me and they'll say, you know, I always ask people, I try to track, where's my marketing? I'll say, how did you find out about me? Well, I saw your brochure. And I'll know that in that store, wherever they saw, there's three other people that have their brochures there. I'll say, why did you pick me? And they say, I saw your face. You look friendly.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I think it's like with anything. How are you going to, in a paper printed brochure, be able to tell whether somebody's got, you know, it's like with anything, or any small business owner, we are selling our personalities as much as we're selling our skill or a service that we have to offer. If chemistry doesn't work with me on the phone with somebody, I'm not going to be in their house. I get in their house. We see how much the chemistry works. A lot of times people are telling me things within minutes. And you would know this as a psychotherapist, don't you, in your social life? Find that people are telling you stuff at parties and going, oh, my God.
I mean, like I had the stamp on my forehead, huh? You know, right? Yeah, okay.
Diana gets people talking about their deepest and darkest, and she just meets them, you know, at a party.
Well,
is that the same for you?
Same for me. Once I get into the house like that, especially if I'm going to be painting their bedroom.
That's a little intimate, I guess.
Hell, and in the 80s, when I was doing a lot of gay men's places in the Castro, we'd start out where the bedroom is the thing that they were going to have painted or something. Now they're feeling friendly with the crew. Everything's good and all good. Now they're like, yeah, they look at each other. We want them to do our basement. Oh, really? Yeah, there's a dungeon down there. Ooh, those were fun
You're
days.
You're kidding. Oh, my gosh. Seriously?
Fun days. Oh, yeah. Whether or not it's going to be a gloss black or a semi-gloss black and a black that's got a green or a blue tint to it to go along with
I've
the sling and the handcuffs and all the metal and the chrome. And oh, it was fun.
Oh my!
I've done lots of dungeons in the city.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to move you guys off the dungeon.
You'll be an X-rated show now.
That just really took me aback. I just never heard that before. Oh, my gosh. I know I'm so naive.
I'm looking at Joey's brochure, and I just want to ask you a question about this. You say on it, I enjoy helping people discover new possibilities for their homes without breaking the bank.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, part of it is because I'm working, you know, I come from a working class background, and I think that the whole idea of art and home decorating and interior design and everything has been something that people feel, I don't have that, you know, I don't have that money. It's out of my realm or whatever. And doing finishes like I do, which involve multi-layers of paint sometimes when you get into those decorative things, people tend to charge a lot of money for that stuff. And I like to kind of demystify it doesn't have to be that way. So if I go into a lesbian home, a gay couple's home, they've just bought a house, and they want to have a really nice dining room or they want to do something really special, I'll say, you know, well, okay, you just had to spend this much on lighting. I help them figure out, you know, furnishings and stuff sometimes. But I don't want it to break the bank that if they really wanted to have a cool finish or something look artistic on their walls, I will negotiate usually something with them. It might be that it's payments over time, but I just don't charge initially the same fees that a lot of people charge in the Bay Area. And they do it because they can. And a lot of times it's just greedy. So I try to work stuff out with people. And sometimes genuinely, I'm sort of old school. If there's something I can trade, I'll do it. You got a skill or you got something I can use or whatever, I'll do that. But art, I feel, is
drum.
See, not in my purview because I'm using my hands for painting all the time.
I mean, that's what Cher was talking about earlier, that you picked up that that generosity, that care, that love. Coming from you. That's what
well, I think art is something that we all, it does affect us, even if we don't know it until it's right in our environments. Mm. And I love to be able to share what I've been able to get in my life and see if I can pass that on in some way. Mm.
So what would you advise people who are listening right now or who might come on to our website in a month and listen to the show? What would you advise people to do if they're, answer it both ways, if they're in a couple and if they're single, because there's some single people out there too. They do exist.
If they're interested in.
Yeah. I'm one of them and very happy to be single.
Yeah. So what would you advise people to do if they're thinking about changing, decorating, remodeling, painting?
The very first thing is fall in love with either a photograph or really in real life, some other place that you feel really good. Notice and pay attention to your body. If you go to a party sometime, whether it's over the holidays or the summer or you're somewhere, and that's on the interior. If you walk into a room, say people are playing games in a dining room, a lot of people notice when they don't like an area. But notice what rooms, bedrooms, offices, facilities, whether it's a commercial place or somebody's home, what feels good. And especially if you're in a couple and you've wandered off and somebody's invited you to go talk down in the study, you know how people will go, come on down, Sheridan, come down, see this room with me. And you love that color. And Sheridan goes, oh, I hate being in here. And then you know, oh, okay, we are never going to have that color in our house. But those kinds of conversations, start the conversations if you're in a couple, if you're on your own and stuff, just notice how your body feels. If it's for exteriors and you're looking, you've got a house, whatever, and you can paint the outside, again, fall in love with somebody else's house, a place that looks a lot maybe like yours and in another neighborhood. And people love to be flattered with exterior colors. You leave a note. It's like, God, I love the colors of the outside of your house. Would you mind telling me? Leave your email address. People, I've never had anybody refuse to respond to that. They love having people tell them. But it's mostly about paying attention, like a lot that you two talk about on your show, is really kind of start paying attention to that, because all kinds of options open up. When you thought you needed to have a blue room, it might be that you end up with a coffee color room and something you hadn't even considered.
I like this woman, you know?
I know.
I mean, I really like what you're saying about connecting people to, you know, their somatic experiencing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where it starts. And so many times we're so out of touch with that. And so look at, you have this psychology background that you don't probably know you have. Well, maybe you do know you have.
That's why I'm the doctor of color. But you know, Diana, you know how a lot of people work in environments where they're in offices and they're stuck in cubicles, or they can't control where they're working, or maybe it's just real busy all the time and everything. And they go back, and again, if they're renting, they think it's the last thing I want to do. But you just take a little bit of time, you can be very happy in your environment. Really happy for very little effort.
So any other steps that they could take? Okay, know about the color, notice your body inside, how you're reacting.
Do not invite children, your neighbors, your relatives seriously, people say, well, you know, my sister told me I shouldn't put any red in this house. Why? Well, she's a designer. She's a graphic designer. She knows what those colors look like. Well, you know what? They probably don't, usually. And kids, their vision has not even, their brains have not developed like an adult's has to be able to notice the nuances of colors. That's why children's colors, like in daycare, they're very bright. Mm-hmm. They're super, you know, wild. And as adults, we have those more subtle gradations and shades and everything. So you don't ask your kids, do you like this? And ask your mother and ask your neighbor and your gay couple and the gay friend who's acts like he's the interior designer. Go by your gut. Start looking at books and stuff. If you have to watch those damn shows on TV with the home improvement, watch them. But they're usually just pushing product. And again, it's about, like you were saying, you know, go back, feel what it feels like to you. What's the somatic experience you're having? We usually know.
Yeah. How do people get in touch with you?
Go to my website, which is thecoloreffect.com. And if you want to read more about some of my adventures like this, I do write about some things. I don't name names. I have a blog site out of there, which you can see right from my website. But it's thecoloreffect.blogspot.com.
Could you spell out the color effect just for people who might not know how you're spelling?
Yeah, I got you. T is in Tom, H is in her, E is in every, the word the, and then color, Americanized, C-O-L-O-R, and effect, it's EFFECT.com, thecoloreffect.com.
Beautiful. We're going to be closing the show, and we're going to be ending with a lovely song called Proud. So I would like to ask you, what are you most proud of?
Oh, I think the work that I've done out in the community in various ways. And I used to be on the Gay and Lesbian Speakers Bureau, and having a girl come across the room to me who was in seventh grade with tears in her eyes and just come up, you know, thanking me so much for sharing, like, some of the earlier questions that we had in this interview. If I could, you know, help to save one life. And when I walk into homes now as the girl painter that sometimes the moms or the dads say, and the kids look at me, and I know that they look, and still, I know it's 2012, it still has an impact. It still shows that females need to be strong role models. So I'm most proud of that's something I can do.
Wow. Thank you so much for being on our show tonight. It's never enough time.
Yeah.
Right? Last words, Diana?
No, I just really appreciate you being here, Joey. I mean, bright. I want to ask you about your last name.
I chose my last name. I wasn't born with it, and I actually had it as a first name for a while, but I'm Latina. My first name is Alicia. It's still my legal first name. And Bright was a name that during that whole time in the 70s when a lot of women were changing their names to Leaf and Flower and what was it, Forest and all that. I was a singer and in a duo, and I I love the city. And I said, I'm going to be bright. I'm going to be bright city lights. And I had that for like 5 years. But I then later, and this is all pre-9/11, when it was easier to change your name, I kept Alicia as my legal name, took on Bright as my last name. And Joey was a very private nickname that I had for many years. And I just decided to start, you know, coming out and using that as my my name that most people know me as, Joey Bright now. Mm-hmm. You look on the internet, it's all over the place. I'm mm-hmm. connected to the Obama campaign and Atheist Film Festival and, you know, all kinds of different various aspects of my life. It's under that.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. I thought it was connected to your painting, but
It turned out to be a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So thank you so much,
Thank
Joey.
You for having me. It's been great.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. Again, congratulations to Dara Dixon for winning those tickets, and we hope that you too can be living proof that you can walk with integrity and pride and do something to help the world and get your artistic self met as well, just like Joey, our guest. Everybody have a great night tonight.
Good night.
I look into the window of my mind. Reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my stop me now, and you can do the same, yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never too late to try. What have you done today to make you feel proud? Mm-hmm. You could be so many. So many.